Hi, this is Joe Roberts with OneWineDude.com, and you're listening to One Wine Dude Radio. Today I'm talking to James Suckling, formerly of Wine Spectator, now branching out on his own with a new video website called JamesSuckling.com. James talks about the impetus behind the site, why he left Wine Spectator, and has some interesting things to say about the wine blogosphere. Let's have a listen.
Sure, I'm driving in Los Angeles, so there's loads of traffic, so I have loads of time because I'm not driving anymore.
if your temperature starts to rise and you get to the boiling point, just now let me know.
Don't worry. I thought you were talking about my car.
Actually, there's more to worry about in the highways of LA than your car breaking down.
Exactly.
Well, appreciate you taking a few minutes.
Sure.
And so you've got the new website launching on Monday, I think, right?
Yeah, it's sort of a soft launch because there's still some, a few bugs to fix, but it's the videos are running well, and I think the design looks really cool. So obviously there's always a few glitches, on the site, but I think it's ready to show the world what we're sort of up to.
Yeah, so tell me a bit about that. So you're going exclusively with video now, which is quite a new direction.
Well,
what was behind
that? It's really about, it's 80% video, all high definition. It runs best on iPads and iPhones. The idea is, a new video every day, 365 days of the week, of the year, sorry. And it's everything. There's tastings in vineyards, in wine shops, with collectors. So it's a combination of all those things. But the general idea was, I spent my whole life writing and critiquing wines. And it was always one-dimensional. It was always the written word with scores. And I thought to myself, it's time to actually deliver this information in a new and lively way for today. They would reach people in a more emotional way than just text. So that's why I came with, I got in touch with my good friend James Orr, the Canadian film director, and he's a big wine collector and a great buddy of mine. And I told him my dream and my idea, and he came on board. So, it's about the product, people, and the place.
So can you give us a couple teasers of some of the spots that you're profiling in the early days of the videos there?
Sure. Well, even like right now, today, we're going around to some of the key wine shops in Southern California, like a High Time wine cellars, the Wine Exchange in Orange County. Then we're going down to Silver Lake Wine and Silver Lake. And I go into the shops and I say, I'm here at such and such. I called ahead and I said I wanted to taste their five best wines that are $30 or less and that they think are 90 points or more. And I'm going to pay for them and taste with them and see if they're right. So that's one of the little genres I do every week, whether it's in Southern California, New York, Montreal, Hong Kong, London. And then the other things I do, because, that's a cool idea, because for so long I was writing about wines and maybe they were available in the States, maybe they would be later, maybe they're already sold out. So I thought, what about videoing actually the experience the consumer has and rating and videoing at the same time wines that people could act on the moment they saw the video and they know that it's in the market. And actually I paid for the wines too, so it's not like, they gave them to me. Then the other usage would be, as you've seen from the other videos, like I could be at Lafitte and I, go to Lafitte, see the guy, and then I taste the recent vintages with them, or I could be with, Bruno Giacosa tasting his Barolo, or I could be with the people from Spotswood in Napa, or I could be in Champaign. All those I've already done. I have 150 videos, which range from 3 to 6 minutes. excuse me, ready to roll.
In terms of the video, when you did sort of the teaser launch, and I know initially some people actually were confused about the presentation of it, because I remember one version you had some text that said, you know, can we achieve perfection? Maybe not. And then you've got you in a couple spots and some storied winers saying, you know what, this is a perfect wine, 100 points. And people were thinking, well, is he playing a joke on us? Or so can you kind of explain what you were after with that one?
All we were really were after were just to pick people's interest and sort of have some fun with it and just show that we were doing something different. So I don't think there was any sort of great message in that other than to show people that where we've been and some of the sort of just sound bites and get people interested in it.
And you spent a long, long time at Wine Spectator, obviously, and built up a following there. So why leave Spectator? Was it specifically to kind of get into this new realm, or did that develop sort of after you had already made the decision to go?
No, it was, you know, I spent 29 years at Wine Spectator, and, you know, I started when it was in a garage in San Diego with 800 circulation, and, you know, I had been there a long time, and I just, you know, got to a point in my age, I said, you know, I really want to do something on my own, and I want to be in charge of my own destiny, and there's some dreams that I want to fulfill, and the main one was to have a website and deliver what I know, share what I know in the past, what I know now, and what I'll know in the future in a new way. And it was as simple as that. There was no bad feelings or anything. It was just time for me to really go in my own mind.
You say you started in a garage, and so that kind of
San Diego.
That kind of sort of bootstrapping mentality, I think, is really prevalent right now in wine blogs, like the one that I'm running, and that, you know, we see hundreds of. What are your impressions of those now that we've got this sort of this big proliferation, kind of explosion of that that kind of coverage of wine?
I think it's great. I think that the fact that there's so many wine bloggers, it's sort of this grassroots movement for wine, which is really important, and it shows that there's such a huge interest in America, particularly in younger generation, which is really exciting. And that I'm really happy everyone's writing about it and everyone's exchanging ideas about wine, because that's one of the best things about wine, is actually exchanging your thoughts, your emotions about it, tasting with people, drinking with people. That's what it's made for. It's a, you know, it's a provocative product. It gets everyone talking, everyone sharing. And I love it.
Yeah, and passionate, and arguing, and all the other things,
exactly,
I guess, that go along with it. Yeah,
exactly. That's just part of it. You know, it's totally, you know, a subjective. It's all opinions. I mean, some are better educated than others, but I think it's great that everyone's so interested in it. And that's been a huge change. You know, I moved away to Europe 25 years ago, and now I've come back. Actually, was born and raised in Los Angeles. And it's just so great to see the wine culture here. And what I think is exciting, too, is our people in their 20s and 30s are really into wine. And often if I talk to them about the classics, you know, Bordeaux, Burgundy, or even, let's say, California, they're more likely to know cool wines from Piedmont, like an awesome Barbera, or a cool, Rhone blend from the Languedoc, then they're going to know about talking about Bordeaux or Napa Valley. That's cool.
Yeah, quite an interesting shift happening, especially.
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
What are your impressions on the way that the Bordeaux pricing has gone? You know, and now that we see like big time sort of new money Hong Kong collectors coming in some of these wines that we describe as the classics, people maybe a generation away from ever being able to taste now with the way those prices are going.
Exactly. No, I know. I think that the thing is, those are the headline grabbers, you know, and I spend quite a bit of time in the Far East. In fact, I'm the wine editor for the Asian Tattler, which is a top magazine out of Hong Kong with 17 titles across Asia. So I know the market pretty well. And those headline grabbers are really a – very particular part of the market. You know, it's like talking about expensive watches or handbags or Ferraris or whatever. So it's one segment of the market and a very, very tiny, rarefied part of the market. But there's also this level below that are drinking interesting wines, good value wines. So I think that's headlines. But the fact is, you know, places like China, I heard from a friend of mine who runs the Richemont Watch Group in the Far East. He told me that there's 100,000 new millionaires in China every month.
Whew.
And new wealth generated there is insane. And interestingly, part of that new wealth is to show it off, and part of that is by buying expensive luxury goods. And these expensive top-end Bordeaux and Burgundies are part of their buying list. So I think that those wines are going to become more expensive and harder to get. But the fact is, for most people, they're already out of our pocketbooks, you know, out of our price range.
Yeah, just going from inordinately expensive to impossibly expensive, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Insane. You know, when wines start $1,000, you know, $1,000 for just a baby Bordeaux. And the interesting thing I find sort of ironic is at the same time you have the gap between these incredible wines and lesser wines is so small compared to 10 or 15 years ago. That's what's interesting. So you can be buying wines for $50, $100 that are very close in quality to these classic, you know, expensive wines. That's exciting.
Do you think that that Spectator and folks like you, I mean, when there seems to be like a bit of a backlash against the scores nowadays, but I think mm-hmm. people also kind of lose sight of the history of that, in that probably prior to that kind of critical review, you had pretty, you know, pretty expensive, what were supposed to be standard bearer wines that were pretty dirty. I mean, that, mm-hmm. that weren't that good, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so now that mm-hmm. that seems to have kind of the scores and that kind of critical review helps to level the playing field a bit. But now we're seeing
sure.
scores send these prices really crazy. And is that the type of I'm guessing that's not the type of reaction in the market you expect when you give a score to a wine.
No, but I guess I don't get the question completely.
Sorry, I guess what I'm saying is there seems to be a backlash against scores now. From younger folks
okay.
who just get into wine, where they don't have that history looking back, where before there were scores, you had wines that were expensive and supposedly were the best that actually maybe weren't all that good.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess the backlash against scores, the fact is that you still have to be able to tell which wine is better than the other wine, because in fact, you know, funny way, scores might be more important than ever, because there's so much good wine being produced out there, and you know, how does one know which wines to buy? You know, maybe the interesting thing is a 90 point wine today can be a $9 bottle, or it can be a $400 bottle. So people, if you use price, score, and the tasting note, you can make very good educated decisions. And assuming you know actually, you know, who the person is and their palate that's actually critiquing the wine. So I think scores are just as, perhaps even more important. I hadn't really thought about it. More important today than they were in the past. But you need all the information to make an educated buying decision.
Right, including the palate of that person who's given the score, because obviously
that's what's important.
Yeah.
If you get down to the whole blogging thing, I think it's great everyone's talking, but the thing is, it must be hard for people to decide on who to listen to. So I think it's my job too. You know, I've been doing this for 29 years. I think that you need some reference points too, whether you agree or disagree with me or anyone else with a lot of experience, whether it's Bob Parker or Chances Robinson or whomever. I think it's good to have reference points, but it's good also to have new palettes and new discussion and new ideas and new likes and dislikes from people. But everyone needs to actually, you know, have reference points. It's the same with any sort of critiquing, whether it's for movies or books or whatever.
In terms of the new website, so you're going to have a portion of it, I understand, that is more exclusive content, right? That's subscription.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so what's going on with the subscription-based portion?
Well, there's no advertising on the site, and wineries or people that we video don't pay us. So the only way to generate revenue is through subscription. Yeah, so that's generally the more high-end stuff, whether it's Lafleur, Le Pin, Lafitte. I did a 1982 wine tasting with Michael Diamond from Beastie Boys, that sort of stuff.
So with the higher-end piece, it's going to be sort of behind, I don't want to call it the firewall, behind the paywall, you know, of the site. So are you doing that kind of in terms of looking at that as your next moneymaker or your kind of the future for you in terms of keeping the wine side of your stuff profitable and being able to purchase more wine?
That's how I'm going to make, you know, the website is all, the website, you know, is subscription-based. So it's just like having a newsletter, but it's on the internet. So, you know, that's my business model.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I make a living by the subscription. So, interestingly, also, it's not just U.S., it's global. So, I'll have subscribers around the world. And some of the other pay is going to be also the retail videos I told you about. Because I think that has real value. You know, it costs $16 to go to a movie in Hollywood. With the $14.99, you get, 31 videos minimum in a month on ChainSuckling.com. So I think it's pretty good value. Especially particularly when you see, I'm sure we'll send you a link next week and you'll see the high quality of the high definition videos.
Well, I do find that the concept of going into the shops really intriguing, and you're saying, you know, kind of looking at it from a consumer's perspective. Given, you know, all the time you spent in the wine world, did you ever wonder if you were kind of losing touch with what the normal consumer has to go through in terms of when they're purchasing wine? We were just talking about some of these wines that people will probably never, ever get to try, et cetera.
Yep.
Is it kind of a way to kind of get back to that?
Absolutely. Dude, I've been living in Europe for 25 years.
But it's some nice places.
Yeah, it's fun for me to. I always, you know, I love going into wine shops and talking to people and see what's available. And I'm like all the rest of you. And, you know, I'm just like, I'm happy if I've forgotten my credit card, because if I do, I end up buying too much wine.
I always say the most powerful critic in the world is the guy behind the counter for me, you know, at some of the wine shops, you know, like in Jersey.
It's
because
great.
That's
fun. I love it because, you know, I can't taste everything. And, you know, and I love getting turned on to new things. And that's why I love this idea that I came up with, you know, I asked them to pick it out and then we taste them. And then I'm just like, you know, like I was just at Italian Wine Cellars and they were 5 for $5 and pulled out some cool wines, like a white from Aosta, a really cool Santa Barbara Syrah that I thought was Australian. There was, you know, some really cool things. There's a small grower champagne, $29 that I gave 92 points. I mean, that's cool stuff.
When they
so much fun to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure. And when they pull them out, are they pulling those out just as the staff thinks they're the best five, or they're doing it based on like other ratings, or
Well, I leave it up to them. But these guys, their special areas, they made the selections, like their champagne person, their Italian person. So it was really cool. But I leave it up to them, really. But I think that's, you know, again, that's worth paying for, because it's information that, you know, you get right away and you can actually act on it right away. You can call.
Yeah, that's a good point. Something that's actually available.
Right away, it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? You've got the launch coming up and obviously some focus on that, but what's next for you? Is there any...
Well, that's really... Nothing next. That's going to take... I don't know how I'm going to do it all in 24 hours. I'm really worried.
I'll bet. I mean, 365 days a year. That's a tough call, man.
Yeah, exactly. That's to keep me busy. I may have created a monster.
Yeah. I mean, that's an enormous amount of hustle, my friend.
Yeah, I know. It already is. So, anyways, I'm excited. And I'm excited to the reaction because I just think it's going to be really amazing, the video. And the nice thing is because I'm my own boss, that I can tweak things the way I want and go in directions that are fun and interesting. And, you know, I'm sure some... I hope most people like it. I'm sure there'll be some people that won't like it, but you know, that's just the way it is. I mean, that's the job of being a critic.
Great. Well, thanks so much for taking the time.
No,
to
my
talk
pleasure.
With me.
Yeah. Hope to meet you one day if you come, you know, yeah, who knows, maybe in Europe or LA or wherever. So.
Well, thanks so much. I'm looking forward to checking jamessuckling.com out at the launch and seeing what you've got in store for those poor guys behind the counter at the shops.
Okay. We're going to another tasting now, so it'll be fun.
All right, have fun.
All right, thanks again.
Cheers.
Take care.
Thanks.
All the best.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.